What's it like growing up around addiction?
I knew something was wrong, but I just couldn't put my finger on it. You know, there was so much shame in it. My dad fought so hard. When I was 30 and I got pregnant with my daughter, I went to therapy because I knew that I had inherited some really unpleasant characteristics.
What were they?
And then I started to get anxiety again. And I thought, what's this? I've just spent so much money.
Right, I've healed.
On therapy, why am I waking up at 4 a.m, like my world is ending? There's part of me, Debbie, that went, finally,
yeah.
Everything I knew as a child, I went, oh, here it is. I knew this was coming.
How did you know that it was perimenopause? What was the light bulb moment?
I was making a show about women's health, breaking the taboos for Channel 5. And lots of women talked to me about suicidal feelings.
Is that how you were feeling?
Set yourself challenges, put yourself in uncomfortable situations, do things that you think are going to be difficult because you're so much stronger, so much braver. Step out of your comfort zone because on the other side of fear are wonderful things.
Welcome to Grit and Grace with me, Debbie Wasko. In this series, I'll be chatting to a whole host of incredible guests to discuss the unique challenges, triumphs, and transformative experiences that often define us as women in midlife. Through shared personal stories and advice, we're going to tackle some of the most important and relevant women's issues to date. I see this as more than just a podcast. It's a movement to change the narrative around midlife so that women see their second act as a time of opportunity, renewal, and excitement. So join me, Debbie Wasko, on this journey of grit and grace, sponsored by The Better Menopause, science-driven solutions for women in menopause. My next guest is a much-loved British TV presenter, having fronted some fascinating documentaries, including Inside the Factory and The Truth About series. She co-hosted The Jump on The Piste for E4 and has also appeared on Celebrity MasterChef and more recently, SAS Who Dares Wins, and she's also a mum of two. Welcome to Grit and Grace, Cherry Healy.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, darling. Thanks for coming
it's
on my
so
podcast.
So nice to be here.
So let's begin at the beginning. Tell me about baby Cherry and Cherry growing up.
Gosh, well, I think probably one of the most formative things in my life is that I've got three brothers. And I know that sounds like a strange place to start, but as you get older, you reflect on your life. And I think turning 40, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, was a really pivotal experience because you've lived enough life to really look at your actions and the consequences of your actions, but you've got enough life, hopefully, to really drive the bus and be in charge of your life. So I think I spent a lot of time reflecting on myself and my life when I was 14. I thought having three brothers has really shaped me because growing up, you either got stuck in or you were on your own. So I'm quite good at sport and I can run around and I love to, if you throw a ball, I'll chase it. And it's given me, I think, a bit of grit, perhaps. I also don't mind being covered in mud. I'm quite a girly girl, but I don't mind, you know, falling in a puddle and playing sport. I think it's also, I don't take myself too seriously, I think, when it's unnecessary. I don't mind people taking the piss out of me. I think it's a love language for me because my brothers did that. So if someone teases me, it's a love language. The thing that I'm sensitive about is things like silent treatment. And that comes from my dad, unfortunately. Again, he struggled. He was wonderful, but he did struggle with lots of things and had some quite challenging behaviour issues and a lot of addiction problems. So on one hand, I'm really easygoing and I don't get offended easily at all. You can call me any name and it will make me laugh. And I don't get offended at any jokes. I'll just, because I've got three very silly, very funny brothers who always take making jokes. And on the other hand, I'm unbelievably sensitive and hyper-vigilant and hyper-emotionally aware of every bit of energy to the point where sometimes I think I'm a witch. I think a lot of women feel like that. And that's because I've grown up not knowing when the bomb's going to go off and having silent treatment as a result of putting even a tiny foot wrong. And that, as a little girl, it's really difficult to understand why your parent is giving you silent treatment or is cross with you for days and days and days. So I think I'm a funny mix of really tough, really ambitious, and really energetic and very sensitive and have anxiety sometimes, occasionally. And unfortunately, as I got with perimenopause, that's been the one thing that I've found really stressful, because I've got more anxious and I'm already quite sensitive. That's me in a nutshell. Yeah.
What's it like growing up around addiction? Did you really realise that's what it was?
No, I didn't know. It's such an interesting question. I didn't know, but I knew. I knew something was wrong, but I just couldn't put my finger on it. And I remember my mum and dad arguing so much, but only when we'd gone to sleep, and you know, my poor mum like doing her best to navigate a really difficult situation, and my poor dad as well, because addiction is a monster and it gets you. And we didn't talk about addiction like we do now. You know, there was so much shame in it. My dad fought so hard. He never left us. He stayed and he really tried to fight it. But with addiction comes so many difficult behavioural patterns, and you're just not yourself, and you don't behave in a way that's rational. So I used to argue a lot in the evening, and I don't know why I did this, Debbie. I still can't quite work out why I did this, but I'd always stay up to listen to it. It's so weird. And
when I say, you needed to hear it, or
because I could hear
it
a bit.
You thought you could help.
It's like there was a monster downstairs, and it was scarier to be. So sometimes I would go and sit at the top of the stairs in my little white nightie. And when I say it's the scariest thing I've ever experienced, it's really hard to explain how scary it is, because it feels like, oh, it's just your parents arguing. But I think that's the most scared I've ever been in my whole life, and I've had some scary things happen to me. I'll never be as scared as I was as a six-year-old listening to my parents argue, ever. It's not possible to feel more scared than I did then. And it went on for many years, and they really did their best to navigate, and they really loved each other very much. And my dad was really great as well. When he was in a good place, he was like the life and soul of the party. I mean, all my friends are like, oh, we love Nick, he's so fun, which he was. Really, really talented lawyer. Had his own law firm, even though he had a really bad addiction problem. I don't know how he did that. He's a seriously smart man, very snappy dresser. Imagine like Austin Powers and like James Bond, and then put them together.
Got it.
That's my dad.
Yeah.
When he was younger, he had huge inheritance. And he went to Paris and spent it on Aston Martins. He bought a racetrack. He looked fabulous. Drove around in this convertible in Paris. Paid for everyone's dinner in restaurants all the time. Oh, everything's on me. He was super charismatic, super flamboyant. I think he had like silver knee-high platforms and wore velvet outfits. He was fabulous. And I think it makes me sad. Sadly, he passed away a few years ago. And I felt relief in a way, because I think he was tired of fighting his demons. And I felt sad because I felt like it was a life missed. Super smart, the life and soul of the party, just this fabulous energy, really cozy. My dad was cozy. He was really affectionate. He loved to cuddle. He was like he could have been like the best dad ever, but addiction got him. And I think we talk about addiction in a much, much better way now, but I'm so sorry that he missed that.
How do you think it's impacted you and how you live and how you understand yourself and the choices that you've made in your life?
My dad's addiction has been fundamental to who I am, to the point where I don't know who I'd be without it. I think it's given me lots of really good things and some challenges, some difficult things. I think it's given me a real awareness on my impact on other people. I do really try to be aware of not hurting other people's feelings. I don't always get it right, of course, but I am aware of how I impact other people and how your energy impacts a room. So if you come in face like thunder, remove yourself from that situation, because we think we're this finite being, you know, we're this flesh pocket, but we're not. We emit energy and feeling and atmosphere around us. So be really careful where you put that. Be responsible with that, because you can ruin someone's day very easily. You can ruin someone's week with careless words, careless energy management. And I wish we got taught that in schools. Yes, mind your please and thank yous. I say to my children, I don't even mind if they swear. Obviously, don't swear. But you can ruin a day by saying to someone, how are you? Cold as ice. So be careful with your energy. Be aware. So it's given me that.
That's the empath.
That's the empath. And sensitive to other people's feelings. And on the other hand, I think it's made me probably too sensitive, perhaps, sometimes. When I was 30 and I got pregnant with my daughter, or 28, I went to therapy because I knew that I had inherited some really unpleasant, or I didn't want those characteristics.
What were they?
I'm really, like, very sensitive to everything, and I just wanted to learn how to tone that down a bit. Bit of passive aggressiveness, unable to say to someone, I didn't like it when you did that, but instead being cross with them without communicating that. It's taken me a long time to be able to say, I didn't love it when you did that. And that doesn't always go well. No. That's not always received very well. Yeah. So sometimes you can be really grown up and say to someone, I didn't like this. And the response is, fuck you, which happens. But so yeah, I've spent more money than I can tell you in therapy. When I was 28, my dad had a huge breakdown. Really massive breakdown, like disappeared for 5 days, took his shotgun, took his passport. Like it was really, and everything I knew as a child, I went, oh, here it is. I knew this was coming. I've known this was coming my entire childhood. And we've kind of played a game of it's all fine because you have to. Because as a family, what other option do you have? You have to try and keep it together and keep it going. And you know, sausages and mash and Sunday walks. You've got to keep it going. You can't always dismantle something. But I knew that my dad was not okay and that this wasn't okay. And it wasn't behind closed doors. What was happening in the atmosphere wasn't that fun and was really stressful. And I was nervous a lot of the time. So when he had a breakdown when I was 28, there's part of me, Debbie, that went, finally.
Yeah.
Finally, I feel like I've been taking crazy pills for 28 years, and here it is. I was really sad for my mum, I was really sad for him. But there was a part of me that thought, oh, can we talk about this now? And then we did, as a family, we started to talk about what was going on, and it was quite a relief, finally. I was like, yeah, Dad's not okay, is he? And this is not normal, and his behaviour is not okay. But you never know what goes on behind closed doors. Because we look like a perfect family. And there were some really difficult things going on. You never know what's going on, and then you have to try and be kind to people because people can look all shiny and smiley, but you never know.
Let's talk a bit about that sense in which life is best understood with hindsight.
Yeah.
It's one of the things I always think about with you, and I hear you talk about being in perimenopause and realising that you were in perimenopause and the anxiety that you felt and the context of that kind of aha moment that you've just described with your trauma and experience around living with your dad and addiction. So bring us on another decade.
I was so lucky because this is a strange addendum, but I was really lucky because I did a loo paper advert in America in my 30s.
Okay. Go again.
Stay with me.
I'm with you.
It does connect. So in my early career, I was doing shows about taboo issues, sex, money, dating, marriage. I was really privileged to be able to spend my career talking to women about their lives, and it was wonderful. And I talked about lots of things that women weren't talking about at that point. I was talking about them on TV. And so an American company came to the UK and said, we need
a girl for loo role.
Right. We need someone who's not afraid to talk about poo and bums. So the word on the street was a girl called Cherry Healy, and she was able to talk about that. And I had an interview with them, and I was really pregnant. And I just found out that day that I got piles. And it was the only thing I didn't want in pregnancy. But I did get them because I tried to lift some furniture down some stairs.
It turned out to be excellent timing.
Piles. I mean, it all connects because my dad had this really big breakdown my mum had to move house, and so I was helping her leave, and so I was carrying furniture, and I was really pregnant. So I got passed. Anyway, I had this interview with this American company, and they were like, how are you? And I went, well, honestly, I've had better days, because I've just found out I've got piles. And it made them laugh, and we all had a big old laugh about it, and that's how I got the job. I got the job because I got
out of every ditch a path, if only you can see it.
Right, so it's funny because those things are really connected in this weird, magical way. Anyway, it was the most amazing job and it paid me really, really well. And, you know, I always say to people, my house is the house that Lou Paper built. And it wasn't even Lou Paper, Debbie, it was adult bomb wipes.
What is an adult bum wipe?
It's like a wet wipe. And they were trying to get people
create a category.
Yeah, they were trying to get people into the idea of, and I know my agent at the time, she said, don't worry, it won't be shown in the UK, no one will know that you've done this. But I always talk about it because they're really funny adverts and I'm really proud of them. Anyway, you can watch it on YouTube.
Thank you.
They're really good fun.
We'll have a look.
The brand is Cottonelle, FYI, they're a hoot.
Grit and Grace.
So, yes, there we go. So I had enough money that I could get some amazing therapy. So for the whole of my 30s, I saw my therapist every single Monday without fail. And if I was filming, we'd do an online session. I was super committed to being a really good parent, a good person, and I was really privileged to have enough money. And therapy is expensive and it's a time commitment, but I was so lucky to be able to do that. And actually, when my dad was really unwell, I had did it twice a week. I was gonna go, I went to see her twice a week. I was really determined to do the best I could to heal wounds. And it uncovered loads of other things as well. And so by the time I got to 40, I honestly felt really at peace, and my dad had passed away and we'd had a chance to reconcile and we'd had like some nice dinners together. And I felt really at peace with that. And I loved my life, I had two lovely children and work was going really well. And then pow, perimenopause hits. So I wasn't anxious or nervous. I was feeling really calm in my life. I was loving my work. I was feeling really good. And then I started to get anxiety again. And I thought, what's this? I've just spent so much money.
Right, I've healed.
I've spent so much money on therapy. Why am I waking up at 4 a.m, like my world is ending, with palpitations? Is this some trauma I haven't dealt with? I went back to see my therapist. She said, I don't know. She said we were in a really good place. You know, I'd seen her for 10 years. Anyway, I just didn't know what was going on. I was in a relationship, a 6-year relationship with someone who wanted children and I didn't want any more children. I thought maybe that's causing me some subconscious stress because I knew it would come to an end, unfortunately. But that relationship then ended. And I felt at peace about the decision, really at peace. It was sad, but I was at peace. Anxiety is still there. The palpitations are still there and it's getting worse. I just didn't understand. I felt like I was going mad, to be honest with you, and I was getting really upset about that. I didn't really tell anyone because I felt like, I don't know, what do you say? I'm waking up at 4 a.m. and I can't get back to sleep and I feel like I'm having a heart attack. It got so bad. This is such an embarrassing story. So one Christmas, it was in lockdown, and I was eating loads of really rich food because I'm a foodie and I love food. And I was eating like steaks and seafood and drinking champagne because that's what we were doing, right? We were doing anything to, you know.
Lift the mood,
and I love cooking. So I was making these wild, amazing meals. And every evening I discovered this thing where it's half mashed potato, half butter, and then loads of cheese and it's just this and loads of garlic. It's this French dish. It's really obscene, and I fell in love with it. Anyway, so one morning, it was about 1 a.m, and I thought I was having a heart attack because I was having a perimenopausal anxiety attack mixed with indigestion. So I called the...
It was the perfect storm.
I called 111, and I said, I've got these symptoms. They said, you need to go into an ambulance right now. But I didn't want the kids to wake up and be scared. So I got an Uber. They said, we're going to send an ambulance. It's going to be blue lights. I said, please don't. I live on a really quiet street. Please don't. So they said, is someone going to drive you to the hospital? I said, absolutely.
An Uber driver?
Yeah. So I got an Uber to the hospital. But my neighbour, I called my neighbour, and they knew that, so they knew the kids were at home. And we went to the hospital. They did every test under the sun. They said, your heart is absolutely fine. You've got really bad indigestion. So that's how bad the panic attacks had got, because I thought maybe this anxiety was a heart problem. Anyway, so this all came to a head, but I was getting really down. It was affecting my days massively. I was crying in the day.
And how did you know that it was perimenopause? What was the light bulb moment?
None of these stories make me look good. I was making a show about women's health, breaking the taboos for Channel 5. And I'd been interviewing gynecologists, consultants, menopause experts. We were talking about vaginal dryness, menopause, all things, incontinence, everything about women's health that we're not allowed to talk about. And it was such a gift of a program to make. But I was increasingly hearing about menopause, and I had no idea about menopause before this. If you'd asked me to give you an idea about it, I said, it's when you stop your periods, that was the extent of my knowledge. So this show is a real education. And I realised, and lots of women talked to me about suicidal feelings. I interviewed lots of women.
Is that how you were feeling?
I wasn't suicidal, but I was really upset. And it's really secret. I didn't tell anyone. And it'd been going on at this point for about a year and a half, nearly 2 years. So, you know, it's a long time to be feeling really increasingly horrendous. But you never know, women are so good at masking. You'd have never known that I was having these midnight wake-ups. And at the end of the program, I was interviewing this amazing, amazing gynecological expert, menopause expert, called Dr. Galley. And I said, can I have 5 minutes of your time? And I explained my symptoms to him. And he said, you're absolutely perimenopausal. And this is progesterone leaving. It's the first one to go. It's your calming hormone. Everything you've said to me suggests that you're perimenopausal. And he said, I want you to try these lifestyle changes. And I want you to go and speak to a nutritionist. And I want you to go and read about sleep. And I want you to go and do all these things. Before we talk about HRT, let's see if we can manage this through lifestyle. And then coincidentally, a company called The Better Gut contacted me. And they were like, we're interested in working with you, and we've heard you. I think at that point I'd mentioned it a little bit on my socials, but I hadn't seen a nutritionist, hadn't seen a sleep expert. I just talked about it a little bit on my socials, but hardly at all. I was kind of sharing my revelation with people who follow me. And then Joe from The Better Gut contacted me and said, hey, we see you've been talking about perimenopause. We're interested in working with you. Do you want to do a nutrition, an overhaul, and do you want to try this product? So I said yes, and then that's how I started working with them. And Joe went through my whole diet. It was like, I thought I ate healthily, but no, I did not. I don't eat till 3 p.m. I live off coffee. That's obviously going to put you in a really heightened state. I do really big workouts, and then I don't calm myself down, so I'm full of cortisol. I didn't have a good sleep routine. I wasn't careful about how much Chardonnay I was drinking before bed. You know, I happily have 2 or 3 glasses with supper. And that is such the sadness of my life is I love white wine, but you just
can't do it.
It's just such a hormone killer.
So you're now a really important part of the Better Menopause family. So talk to us about your routine and what you do and the supplements and how they make a difference in your life alongside everything else that you're doing.
Big changes that I made, which have been amazing, and I'm not on HRT, and if the symptoms get worse, I'm not afraid of HRT, but the lifestyle changes have worked. So no white wine in the evenings. If I'm going to have a glass of wine, sometimes I do, but at least if I do, I know that if I have a panic attack in the night or if I wake up.
That's why.
And so I can calm myself down. The not knowing was actually a really big part of it. Now I know this is perimenopause, take 5 breaths, nothing to panic about. My brain doesn't have to search for something to worry about. We just calm down. So diet, eating 3 regular meals, protein in each of those meals, fiber in each of those meals, lots of water, anything like fermented, lots of things with good bacteria in it, and a gut supplement that's specifically designed for women who are going through perimenopause. And I take it every single day. I have literally got a sachet in every single one of my bags and my coats. And I travel so much for work and I'm using different coats and different bags. I'm sure you know.
Same.
Right? Yeah. So if there's something important to you, it's in every bag.
But I have missed it once. I didn't take it and I absolutely felt
it. How did you feel it? How did it show itself?
Terrible digestive issues. And obviously we have two products. We have Better Gut, which is the every single day product, Better Night, which is the sleep product. But even though I was taking Better Night, my sleep went completely off. And I think, you know, the way that we think about Better Gut and the way that it's been developed by Dr. Harper and by Jo Lyle, our nutritionist, is that is the fundamental. And the sort of jumping off point for me, and you know the story when I had my own kind of health meltdown, was that unless you take control of your gut bacteria as a woman in midlife, nothing else that you're doing will really touch the sides. And that, absolutely, for me, was the fundamental.
It's a bit like skincare. You can put all of the creams and you can get all of the Botox you want, but if you're not drinking enough water and getting enough sleep, you can't plaster over it. You cannot laser your way through a bad diet and not enough sleep. There's no Botox on the planet that's strong enough to get rid of a bad diet and not looking after yourself. And it's the same with your gut. You can go to the gym and you can try and eat lots of carrots, but if your gut health isn't good, then it's just, and you need a real mix of foods and you need regular feeding. I'm a child of the 90s. I'm used to starving myself. It's just part of our, and so now it's been really interesting training myself to eat. And I'm actually training for this competition at the moment. And I'm having to do a thing called carb loading. And I wish my 90s self could look at me now, like consciously eating three times a day, making sure that I'm fed. And my weight has never been more stable. I've never had more energy. I've never felt better. My gut health is wonderful. And I did a really difficult show last year. SAS.
Okay, well, let's do that. Right, talk to me about SAS, how and why. And the jumping off in the dark.
So funny, because I've watched that show. Have you watched it?
But I couldn't watch it, because I couldn't watch you doing it.
Oh, God.
I was so stressed.
Have you ever watched it before?
Yes, because I watched it when Matt Hancock was on it.
Oh, so, my God, totally. I mean, obviously.
Yeah.
So I've watched that show for years. I love it. I'm a super fan. So I've always watched it and thought, why? Why would you do that? And then it's so funny what the universe does. So I remember talking to my friend, and I was 40, and I did feel very physically fit, and I felt like, you know, and I was starting to sort out my anxiety. I was just starting to feel really good. My diet was in order. I'm taking a great gut supplement. My sleep is in order. And I'm starting to feel like, do you know what I'd like? I'd like a really big challenge, a big one, like a huge one. I want to see what I'm made of. Do I really have that metal that I think I do? Do I really have the strength of character, the resilience? I think I do, but I don't know. Going about my everyday routine, there aren't that many great big tests. So I'd sent it out to the universe, but it'd been guttural. You know when you ask for something in a guttural way? I think the universe listens.
Were you manifesting?
Oh my goodness me, it was so quick.
And then incoming.
It was about a month later.
Did you want to do the show?
My agent called me and said, we've just had an offer for you to do the show. And having previously thought people were crazy to do that show, I mean, I said yes straight away. I was like, absolutely.
Okay, so how did you train?
Oh my God. I didn't have long, actually. I only had 2 months. So I went at it. I borrowed my friend's husband's. He does lots of like marathons in the Amazon. I went to their house in Kent and I borrowed his weighted jacket.
Saw the weighted jacket.
It was...
I love a weighted jacket.
Right? It's so good. When do you use it?
I use it on the running on an incline on the treadmill. But I also use it to double down on pull-ups and stuff. I'm a nutter as well.
Oh,
right?
My so, gosh. Yeah. Oh, pull-ups. I've done my first one. You can do a pull-up. That's so badass. That's so badass. It's so exciting to do your first one. So you do one in a weighted jacket. Okay, I'm going to...
I've been at it a while, though. I've been
okay, fine. I'm going to do... That's my next challenge. So I did the weighted jacket was brilliant because I wanted to mimic the huge backpack that you have to wear, which is, I think, 25 kilograms. So this jacket was 32 kilograms because I thought I want to over prepare.
Okay, and
I
would run. More than me.
I ran around London, and I named the jacket Jeff. Me and Jeff went everywhere. We had a love affair. I just ran and I ran and I ran. I'd ran from my house in Ealing to Oxford Street, which is really far, up Notting Hill, up Holland Park. And I just ran and ran and ran to the point where I got really used to it. And I was doing lots of things. I was doing these things called farmer's walks in the gym where you carry two huge ones. Heavy, heavy, heavy.
See, to me, you obviously looked and are amazingly fit. Well, and you, yes, yeah. And you can lift weights, which we know is really important for women in midlife. Grit and grace. It was the mental bit for me. Like, how do you prep for the mental bit?
So I went to my friend's, I've got a wonderful friend called Davina, and she lives by the sea in Margate. And I went swimming in the sea in the middle of winter in my just my swimming costume. And I did things like that. And I just thought, you've just got to do it. You've got to do a few things. And I would go and stand outside of my garden in the freezing cold and squelchy mud. Just do it. I just got myself into place. I also did go back to therapy. A couple of my wonderful therapists, I had three sessions of therapy. And I said, because we were filming in, I knew we were filming far. I didn't know where, but I knew it was far. And I said, I'm worried I'm going to get a bit homesick. And she said, just know that, because I believe in God and I'm quite a spiritual person. She was like, just know that God is with you all the time. Wherever you go, it doesn't matter. And that helped me emotionally. And I used that lots of times when things got really scary, when they're lifting a helicopter out of the water and you know you're going to be drowned in it. I just felt like I'm safe, I'm fine, I'm not alone, I'm connected. So I got into quite a good mental state. And then I went to see this amazing man called Aaron, who's a hypnotherapist, because I'm also really claustrophobic.
Me too.
Oh, that's the worry.
Never is insane.
Is that your thing?
Yes, I can't. When I've been forced to do anything or something that's meant to be a wellness thing, like a flotation tank, I'm like 30 seconds knocking, like, get me out of here.
And the reaction is huge. So yeah, I have that too. If I get trapped in a lift, it's really bad. That's really bad. And I was worried about that because I know that they do sometimes, you know, bury you in coffins. So I was worried about that. So I got hypnotised for
claustrophobia. And did it work?
And heights as well. And I think it did. I really did. We had to run down a dam face first. I think it was a 400-foot dam, face first. And I did it. And I'm really scared of heights. And we got drowned in a helicopter. We got submerged slowly in a helicopter. And I did it. And so I do think it worked because it talks to the part of your brain, your subconscious, that makes decisions that you're not conscious of. And it's really powerful.
So what can we take from this madness for actual life? So grit and grace. Okay. Right. So we're like, I'm not about to be submerged in a helicopter. I'm sorry, Cherry. When the call comes into me, I'll be saying no.
I bet you would.
I wouldn't. But frame for me now, wrap me up. So all of this, the journey of Terry, the survivor, actually, and the empath and the understanding and the identification of where you are in life and the madness of I'm going to put myself through a massive challenge. Where are we now and what next?
I think you need to do I think you need to do things in life so that you trust yourself. That is the biggest strength that you can have as a human being. Give yourself challenges, say yes to things. You are so much more capable than you think you are, but you do have to put yourself out there to test yourself. Don't be afraid of the emotional stuff that's in the shadows. If you can go and get therapy, that healing is you trusting yourself, talking to those shadows, talking to your younger self. Don't let it sit behind you and stay as a burden. Turn around and look at it, because you can cope with it physically. Set yourself a challenge. Put something in your calendar that's big and scary. My God, it puts a rocket up your bum. When you're doing your workouts, it's the most focusing. You'll love going to the gym. Set yourself challenges. Put yourself in uncomfortable situations. Do things that you think are going to be difficult, because you're so much stronger, so much braver, so much more resilient than you think you are. And when you do all those things, you build a trust in yourself that is like more beautiful than any more beautiful house because you live in your brain. So if you can trust who you are as a person, it's the best gift you could possibly give yourself.
And is that your mantra? If my mantra is grit and grace, because that's the podcast name, give me a couple of words of what's Leavers with Cherry's mantra.
You are braver and more resilient and more capable than you could possibly imagine. So step out of your comfort zone, because on the other side of fear is wonderful, are wonderful things. I think that's my mantra.
I love it. Cherry Healy, thank you. Thank you for joining me in my living
Great
room.
Great questions. Loved. That was wonderful.
I love speaking to my guest, Cherry Healy. She absolutely embodies tenacity and grit. Thought it was amazing the way that she was able to cover off some huge emotional and traumatic topics, talking very openly about her father and addiction, but also about what it's like to stare down the face of a real challenge and to use that to motivate you in midlife. She's absolutely a poster girl for change and reinvention and for just getting it done. And I think there's so much to take from my conversation with Cherry about how to live in joy and energy. Thank you so much for listening today. And thanks to our sponsor, The Better Menopause. For more content like this, don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel or follow us on socials. See you next time as I'm joined by more incredible guests here on Grit and Grace with me, Debbie Wascoe.